This is The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, we'll hear an excerpt of an Atrium magazine article about a bare-knuckle boxer. And later, a UF study found reading for pleasure dropped 40% in the last 20 years. But there are things we can do to fix it. But first, the government shutdown in November forced local nonprofits to fill in the gaps while SNAP benefits were cut off. WUFT's Gabriel Velasquez-Neda has more on how it impacted families then and what's happening with them now.
It's been just over a month since political fighting led to the longest government shutdown in United States history.
SNAP recipients shouldn't go without food.
We don't want to pit health care and food. They do.
We are digging into a contingency fund.
One of the people affected was Nicole Kitchens Rhodes. She works as a client advocate at St. Francis House, a charity in Gainesville.
Think of going to St. Francis, I may help you.
She's into music and has tattoos of musical notes, and she even sings at her church.
9 to 12.
Rhodes is also a single mother of three young children, and she's been relying on food stamps for the last 5 years.
Correct.
When SNAP was cut off, the holidays were coming up, and she had to tell her kids money was tighter than usual.
I do try to be straightforward with them. Well, we won't have the food stamps. So some of the things that y'all want, you won't be able to get. I can only get the necessities that we need.
She's not alone. Thomas Fauci is an associate professor at the Florida Gulf Coast University School of Social Work.
When you look at the household recipients of SNAP across the state of Florida, more than half, I think about 63% of households in the state of Florida are actually at or above the poverty level. And a lot of people can't wrap their heads around that either, because again, they think about SNAP as the so-called poor person program, and it's not.
To help out during the shutdown, food pantries like Bread of the Mighty kicked into overdrive. It's a nonprofit food distributor in North Central Florida, and they're on the front lines in the fight against hunger. Trucks drive in and out of the headquarters while people sort food. Patrick Dodds is the organization's executive director. He says the demand increased even before SNAP was cut off, and it ended up bigger than they had anticipated.
We're looking at a shortfall of millions of pounds of food every month that this goes on. Our local SNAP benefits make up for about 6 million pounds of food every month. 6 million pounds of food is what we did all of last year in the four counties we cover.
On November 12th, the shutdown ended, and WUFT interviewed Dodds again. He said the effects are likely to linger.
We had a lot of federal employees who were not paid for, you know, several weeks, upwards of a month. There's so many families that live paycheck to paycheck already that this is going to cause long-lasting impacts that will require them to rely on food banks and food pantries for the foreseeable future.
Thank you, going to St. Francis. I might help you.
WUFT also interviewed Rhodes again to see how she was doing.
I still had to use my finances to pay for groceries and stuff like that. But outside of that, I bounced back.
And it turns out things improved once the shutdown ended. Rhodes received her SNAP benefits and her family's Thanksgiving was okay. But she says she feels luckier than others on the program.
A lot of people that I know are still struggling with this, especially people that's still waiting for their benefits to come through.
SNAP recipients also have to reapply for the program every 6 to 12 months. Rhodes says for some, it's been difficult to get the reapplication interview.
So they're like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So my heart go out to them because I'm like, I don't know. I'm speechless when they tell me that.
But even though the shutdown has ended, the funding is temporary. Researchers are now looking into the future to see how cuts to SNAP and other losses of funding will impact food insecurity.
I think this is the last one.
They may not have to look far. The government needs to pass new legislation to keep doors open in January. For WUFT News, I'm Gabriel Velasquez-Neda.
Bye.
If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Do you have ideas for the show? Let us know. Email us at therundown@wuft.org or tap the menu of the WUFT mobile app and tap Talk to Us. We may feature your voice right here on The Rundown. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, visit wuft.org/therundown or find us wherever you get your podcasts. But first, Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. The spelling of this North Central Florida town was disputed for many years because of the final letter. Do you think you know? Well, stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. Knowing what to recycle when and where can get confusing, especially when it comes to things like electronics and batteries. It can get even more complicated when recycling policies vary between local municipalities. WUFT reporter Sophia Dinka has been looking into recycling in Alachua County, specifically in Gainesville and in Marion County. She's focused on three things: electronics, batteries, and plastic. Host Dana Hill decided to ask her about them.
Sophia, first off, when it comes to recycling electronics, what can people recycle?
That really depends on where you live. If you're a Gainesville Regional Utilities customer, you can recycle small appliances, think like microwaves or toasters, but you need to drop them off at the city's hazardous waste center. There's no curbside pickup for those things. It's different in Marion County and Ocala specifically. The county takes electronics at any of 7 recycling centers. But in Ocala, they don't take electronics year-round. They have specific collection events throughout the year. The next is in December.
Okay, but what about batteries then?
When it comes to batteries in Alachua County, GRU customers can take them to the Hazardous Waste Center or any other regular collection center. It's a different story with Marion County. The county doesn't accept regular alkaline batteries. Those are like your typical double or triple A's. They also don't take lithium or button batteries. They do take most types of rechargeable battery at the Hazardous Waste Center, but that doesn't include electric vehicle batteries. Even though you can't recycle the typical double or triple A, the Environmental Protection Agency says you shouldn't just throw them away. Instead, you can bring them to stores like Home Depot, Lowe's, or Best Buy to recycle.
Was there anything else people should know when it comes to recycling, especially plastic or styrofoam?
Yeah, for sure. When it comes to Marion County, they take most types of numbered plastic. That's like when your to-go cup has a number 5 on the bottom. They just don't take number 6, which is styrofoam, and they also don't want plastic bags. People should also avoid recycling water hoses and buckets because those can actually clog and break recycling center machines.
Where are some of these collection centers that you've mentioned?
So Gainesville's Hazardous Waste Center is on 63rd Avenue. That's just north of the airport. And Marion County has 7 centers that take electronics. Those are in Dunellen, Forest Corners, Fort McCoy, Martell, Newton, Weirsdale, and Ocala. The Ocala location is the one you really want to remember. It doubles as a hazardous waste center. It's called Baseline Landfill.
That's WUFT's Sophia Dinka. Sophia, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Glad to be here.
That was WUFT reporter Sophia Dinka speaking with host Dana Hill about recycling policies in Alachua and Marion counties. Here at the end of the year, as the days get shorter, it means that it gets darker sooner. And this can put people's moods down. Yes, even in sunny Florida. So WUFT's Mei Hu went out across the University of Florida's campus to ask this question. What do you do to lift your spirit in the winter?
My name is Ananya Pradhan. Honestly, whenever I go back to my dorm, I usually just watch a bunch of movies, or I just talk to my roommates, or go on walks, actually.
My name is Nicholas Rotundera. Probably just like making music with friends. We're trying to start up a little band together, so it's been fun so far.
My name is Brooke Peterson. I love to just hole up and read. It's like one of the best things for me. I kind of like when it gets dark early because it feels like I have to do less things. I can just sort of like chill out in my bed and talk with my friends. Also cooking. Oh my God, all the wonderful stews and soups that I can make is like everything that is right in the world. And who doesn't love cold weather?
That story was produced by WUFT's Mei Hu. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Still to come, we'll hear an excerpt of an article from Atrium Magazine about a bare-knuckle boxer. That's after a short break.
Support for WUFT comes from the Law Office of Nellinger & Associates, a Gainesville law firm serving North Central Florida for over three decades, offering services in family law, business law, estate planning, and more. Information at lawyergainesville.com.
You hear the word coal, you're probably not going to associate it with climate-friendly kinds of vibes, right?
We didn't even use the word coal. We said carbon ore. Because of the CO2 issues and things like that, it was the bad actor, if you will.
Yes, carbon ore. I'm Kai Rizdahl, the researcher's rebranding coal. Next time on Marketplace. This evening at 6 on WUFT 89.1, 90.1.
J.D. Vance began his tenure as Veep with a lecture about free speech in Germany,
where police have carried out raids against citizens suspected of posting anti-feminist comments online as part of...
And ended his year on Twitter stanning Nicki Minaj. Next year, the midterms, and then the presidency? That's next time on Today Explained. Tonight at 6:30 and 11 on WUFT.
Support from Sweetwater Branch Inn, a boutique property and event venue in historic Gainesville. Sweetwater offers a secluded getaway for medical recovery and business and personal travel. Located minutes from the UF campus. More information at sweetwaterinn.com.
Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Bare-knuckle boxing has gained popularity among fighters in North Central Florida despite the risk of gruesome injuries. Fists of a Fighter, Heart of an Angel is a fascinating story that goes into this a little deeper. It was written for Atrium Magazine, UF's only narrative nonfiction publication, by staff writer Lauren Brinzel. We thought it would be interesting to share an excerpt from the article, read here by UF performing arts student Riley Siegel.
Angel Keel is left asking again, is all this worth it? Her answer at 12 years old was yes. That was when Angel's dream of fighting began, distracting her from her father's emotional absence while tethering her to the man himself. Professional fighting was their only bond, and they shared it on Family Fridays when Angel's parents would drive their kids to Subway for dinner, then to rent UFC matches on VHS. The Keels lived in a single-wide trailer on a 1,200-acre farm in Archer, Florida. The property was so big that Angel didn't know food could be delivered to a home or that some came with neighbors. One of the video stores they rented from was only 4 miles down the road, but a quarter of the drive was spent just exiting their property. Angel would nestle herself between her mom and two brothers, both older, on the living room couch. Her dad, Albert Keel, would pace back and forth, frequently popping in from smoke breaks to watch the matches. Sometimes the fights were old, but the Keels didn't care. They just liked being together weekly. Well, in the weeks when Albert could partake. Oftentimes, he'd be working or drinking. Sometimes Albert was too physically exhausted from his work laying tiles to spend much time with his kids. Still, the mostly routine family activity was enough to hook Angel on fighting. Growing up, she'd tussle with one of her brothers so frequently that their mom would drive the siblings to the entrance of the farm and force them to walk home alone. In the worst fight they had, Angel threatened to hurt her brother with an axe she grabbed. There was also the time he put Angel in a headlock and cracked her tooth. And once, Angel broke her own toe from kicking him in the head. Her cast extended all the way up to her knee. Albert firmly believed men should never hit women, and he raised his boys in such a manner. But sibling fights were different. Albert lived as he thought a man should. He rarely cried and never accepted handouts. He also never attended Angel's sporting or school events, despite sometimes making it to the boys. And with two brothers, Angel believed Albert wanted her to be a princess, not a fighter. Angel says, some days I'm like, gosh, man, did my dad ever love me?
That was an excerpt from Fists of a Fighter, Heart of an Angel. It's a story recently published in Atrium Magazine from the University of Florida. It was written by staff writer Lauren Brenzel. The full story is out now. Visit atriummag.org. That's atriummag.org. Atrium Magazine is UF's only narrative nonfiction publication. It publishes true Florida stories every week. That story was read by UF student Riley Siegel. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As a reminder, our trivia question this week, the spelling of this North Central Florida town was disputed for many years because of the final letter. The answer's coming up at the end of the show. We'll be back after a quick break. Stay with us.
Pantone's color of the year is Cloud Dancer. It's white, off-white, maybe a little gray. Cue the internet hot takes.
It feels dystopian.
Is the song of the year silence?
I hope you're hungry for nothing.
Oh, but that's precisely the point of color science. Colors provoke emotions in us, but exactly how do they do it? That's on the next On Point. Weeknights at 8 on WUFT.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on The Middle, nearly one in four U.S. adults is currently serving as a caregiver for a loved one, whether that's because a family member has a debilitating injury, is disabled, or suffers from a condition like Alzheimer's or dementia. But are you prepared to provide that support when the time comes? Two caregiving experts join us as we take your calls next time on The Middle, live on Thursday nights at 9 on WUFT.
President Trump's proposed peace deal between Russia and Ukraine has quite a few critics, and that includes European leaders. They worry the president's vision of peace does not match their own. We'll discuss what that vision might be and what the word peace means to all of us. I'm David Green. Hope you'll join Moa Lathy, Sarah Isger, and me for the next Left, Right, and Center.
Thursday evening at 10 on WUFT 89.1, 90.1.
Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Here's a question for you, and I want you to be honest with yourself. When was the last time you read a book? Just because. Well, a recent study out of the University of Florida found fewer Americans are reading for pleasure. It found a 40% drop over the past 20 years. But there are things that especially parents can do to course correct this decline. WUFT's Ailey Shanes spoke with one of the researchers, Jill Sonkey. She's the director of research initiatives at the UF Center for Arts in Medicine. Ailey began by asking what exactly reading for pleasure means.
What would you describe as reading for pleasure? What exactly would that entail?
Reading for pleasure in our study included reading books in hard copy, as well as audiobooks, reading books on a Kindle. So it included all forms of, you know, reading fiction, any other genres of reading. It also included reading the newspaper and reading news. So it really is any form of reading for pleasure as differentiated from reading for work.
When it comes to the decline of reading for pleasure, what is attributed to that?
So in this study, we didn't focus on the reasons for the decline in reading. But we do offer some suggestions for what might account for this decline in reading based on what we know from other literature, from other research. We do know that there are associations between declines in reading and time spent on digital media. And so we presume that that's one of the things that's responsible for this decline in reading over the past 20 years is that, you know, digital media, social media, those things are really competing for our time and attention. And it's possible also that an overall decline in the amount of leisure time that people enjoy these days is a factor in this as well. So we think those are two of the factors that might be at play here.
And what were some of the demographics that you've seen this decline in the most?
Yeah, so there were larger declines among people who identify as Black. There were also larger declines among people outside of metropolitan areas and people with lower levels of education.
What were the age demographic differences?
Yeah, interestingly, the age group of people between the ages of 25 and 65 reported the lowest levels of reading. People over the age of 66 had the highest levels of reading for pleasure, and people between 15 and 24 came in the middle.
Would you say that because this younger demographic isn't at the lowest echelon of the decline, would you say that's a positive thing?
Yes, I would say that's positive. And, again, we didn't study the reasons for these changes, but we might assume that being in school, being in high school and college may be stimulating interest in reading and setting up patterns of reading for pleasure as well as reading for education, which is a good sign.
And what do you think parents can do to stimulate this practice of reading for pleasure and utilizing it in one's daily life?
I think one of the most important takeaways from this study is the importance of parents and family members and adults reading to children. The biggest surprise for me in our findings was that among our sample of over 236,000 people, 21% had children under the age of 9 at home, and only 2% reported reading with children. We do know that reading with children is associated with educational readiness, reading readiness, reading attainment and educational attainment, as well as lifelong learning. And so I think it's a wake up, to all of us who have children at home about the importance of reading to children at home. And not only does it contribute to educational readiness and achievement, but it stimulates creativity and the imagination. And I think it also contributes in really important ways to bonding.
That was Jill Sonkey. She's the Director of Research Initiatives at the UF Center for Arts and Medicine. She was speaking with WUFT's Ailey Shanes about a decline in reading for pleasure. You can find more of Ailey's work at WUFT.org. The holiday season has just begun, and whether you're celebrating Christmas, Hanukkah, or a birthday, or something else, chances are you might be looking forward to receiving a gift. But not all gifts are created equal. We asked WUFT's Chloe Tolton to head out across the University of Florida campus and ask students this question. What was your worst December gift?
My name is Jillian Tran. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida. My least favorite gift I've gotten, I think, has been CDs, and it's specifically because I don't own a CD player. I really enjoy them because they're two of my favorite artists and they look cool, but I don't really have a purpose for them.
My name is Dylan Davis, and I'm from Fairhaven, New Jersey. So when I was like 12 years old, I was a really big like One Direction Harry Styles fan, and my aunt got me this like big book. It was like the book of Harry Styles, and it just like totally ruined my fashion for Harry Styles. Like, it was the most cringe thing I've ever gotten. And I kind of keep my passion for him on the DL now.
My name is Natalie Schock, and I'm from Leesburg, Virginia. I got a pair of bed sheets for, I think, my 8th birthday. My birthday is December 28th, so wasn't that exciting. They were also, like, very thin, so they were definitely summer sheets, so I couldn't even use them when I got them, so that was kind of sad.
My name is Grace Galloway. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina. I got bread for Christmas, but I'm gluten-free, so I couldn't eat it. I think it was like a cruel joke because they knew I was gluten-free, so I just gave the bread to my sister.
Those were responses from UF students on their worst December gift. It was produced by WUFT's Chloe Tolton. We hope this segment got you in the gift-giving spirit. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. This is our last show of 2025. We'll be taking the next 2 weeks off, but don't worry, we'll be back on the air on January 8th. Our trivia question this week was, the spelling of this Florida town was disputed for many years because of the final letter. The answer, Fanning Springs. That's it for The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina.